Welcome to the Market Moment. This week, John and Eli are talking about the Jamie Dimon shareholder letter, as well as how inflation may be causing a culture shift towards small businesses and away from four-year colleges. But before that, if you enjoy this podcast, fun fact, there is a video version available on the Market Moment YouTube channel, along with our other videos like Data Brief and Something Coming Soon. We would love it if you would hit the subscribe button on our new YouTube channel and be a part of this growing Market Moment community. The link will be in the show notes. Now let's get started.
Hello and welcome to the Market Moment. My name is Eli Freeman, joined here with John Martfelt. And we have too much information to go into today, so we're going to hop right into it. So starting off with Jamie Dimon, he just came out with his 2024, I guess it would be 2023, shareholder letter. Went into several different topics, a lot of really interesting things. So I'm excited to dive into what Jamie Dimon talked about. The first thing that I want to talk about, and John, you can bounce back and forth on what you'd like to talk about. The first thing I want to talk about is he talked about commercial real estate and how if interest rates stay higher for longer, it's harder on commercial real estate. And it's something that we had talked about probably in 2022, if rates stayed high, we thought that commercial real estate was going to be under a lot of pressure. Well, we haven't really seen the bust that you might say in commercial real estate. But what he said was we saw a 2% rise in rates and real estate went down 20%, at least in the financial world.
Right. Well, I do think that if you go back 15 years, again, this is stuff we've gone over so many times mm-hmm. on this podcast. If you go back 15 years, interest rates have been low for a long time. And mm-hmm. then you have this sudden, 5%, 500 bip raise in a year. And to Jamie Dimon's point, yeah, we haven't seen dramatic replications of that, right? Where things seem to still be humming along, even though, to your point, 2% up and a 20% down. We've not seen a dramatic thing. But the longer it goes, a lot of things that happen, economic policies, interest rates rising fast or whatever, you don't see the repercussions of it until later down the road. Mm-hmm. And so we're in the early stages of the effects of interest rates.
Yeah.
So I think we're in the beginning stage where we could start seeing some pullback. And then the Fed, hinting that we're going to not lower rates as aggressively or it's going to be pushed out a little further mm-hmm. is going to further put pressure because then your hope is that interest rates are coming down, so everything's going to be back in line the way you want mm-hmm. it. And then if you get it pushed out further, there's going to be more trouble. So stuff that people are barely hanging on making payments to on the commercial side, they could just give up. So that could start happening.
An interesting part of how that could play out in some people's portfolios, I know a lot of there's been a lot of talk about private credit just in this last year. I don't know how many fund managers emailed me and probably you as well just pushing private credit. Private credit is junk bonds.
Right.
They relabeled it this fancy term of private credit, just lower credit borrowers that have to pay higher interest rates.
Right.
And one thing that Jamie Dimon talked about was if a recession does come, credit spreads widen, meaning people who are who are worse borrowers have to pay much more than people who are good borrowers. They have to pay much less.
Right.
And so if rates stay higher for longer and some more of what Jamie said comes true, those private credit funds that are right now paying 12%,
right,
they could be a really risky place to be.
Well, and I think about it on a personal side, credit card debt is at an all-time high and interest rates, because of this interest rate hike, have gone up. There are credit cards charging 30% interest on debt. So as a
criminal,
as a person trying to survive, if you have that type of credit, you obviously are having a harder time surviving, right? Mm-hmm. And then to add on to that 30%, and this kind of same with the commercial, 12% is unattainable for a lot of folks, and that becomes an expense, takes away from opportunity for growth or whatever mm-hmm. you're using that commercial property for. So I think that Jamie Dimon hit it on the head. I want to read something else he said. I thought this was kind of interesting. He did a shareholder letter, which you were talking about, mm-hmm. And basically he's a little bit nervous or that you're staying cautious, but he cited large amounts of government spending and efforts by the Federal Reserve to shrink its balance sheet, as well as ongoing wars in Middle East and Ukraine and the potential to disrupt essential commodity markets, migration, and geopolitical relationships. These significant and somewhat unprecedented forces cause us to remain cautious. Mm-hmm. And he believes that interest rates, he wants bank to prepare for interest rates anywhere from 2% to 8% or even more, which was a wide range of things.
Yeah.
And I think to his point, the fear of maybe interest rates going back up a little bit versus coming back down, which is what we all are expecting and hoping. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I read more detailed into this, and basically it's a cautiously optimistic type of, or more cautiously semi-optimistic now, mm-hmm, versus cautiously optimistic. But I can't agree with him more on the stresses that are in the economy right now, mm-hmm, that we tend to forget about when the market's flying high and everything seems to be going well. You look on the screen every time you look at it, and the Dow and the S&P and the NASDAQ are green, and mm-hmm, we're hitting new all-time highs. You forget about that there is trouble ahead. And at least I kind of agree with Jamie Dimon. There are roadblocks in the road, but every roadblock or whatever you want to call it, the cautious stuff that's coming, yeah, sometimes the market needs a reprieve, a pullback. So I'm not concerned about it at all, to be honest with you. I do see the same things, concerns out there, and I am worried about the market. I'm worried about the short-term effects, and the election is a massive event in most people's mind because this is the most polarizing election I've ever been a part of. And it's two candidates that nobody wants to talk about right now. It's like, I mean, it's crazy. So the election is important. The inflation, the Fed, their action is always important. We're on pins and needles every time they talk, even though we shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things to worry about, and I think Jamie Dimon went into all that, and I couldn't agree more with him.
One thing that I disagree with you on what you just said is,
yeah,
you talked about being fearful in the short term. Frankly, I'm not that fearful in the short term. Let me define fearful.
Yeah.
It's not 20% drop.
Right.
If a 20% drop happens in the market, it happens. Like that happens on a fairly regular basis.
Right.
Now, what I'm fearful of is what Jamie Dimon is fearful of. And I think he does a great job of projecting long-term problems. And he's a long-term thinker. I mean, he's a wonderful CEO. And the reason that he is he knows the trends of where things are moving, and he's moving in those directions.
Right.
Like, he talked about his deal with First Republic, where they bought First Republic and have just made massive gains because that bank was on turmoil and they were able to come in and save it. Well, because they were long-term focused, they were able to purchase First Republic whenever First Republic went under. But
right.
JB Dimon does a great job of looking forward. Well, what he's talking about is our government is just, and it's really not that hard to figure out, our government's spending much more than they're making.
Right.
And as long as we continue on that trend, there's long-term underlying problems that need to be addressed that currently are not being addressed.
Well, that stuff I've talked about ad nauseum too.
Yeah.
Our government has let us down and our leaders have let us down. When you bring in less money through revenue, which is from taxes, than you have to pay to service your debt, which is interest on your debt, to pay the non-discretionary, which would be your Social Security and your Medicare, and you can't, and then after that you don't have enough money to pay for mm-hmm. military and senator salaries and all that stuff, and all of our departments of this and departments of that in Washington D.C. and beyond, we are in trouble. Any human person that ran their personal finances that way mm-hmm. would be bankrupt. There's nobody would accept. You wouldn't be able to get credit. You wouldn't be able to continue to push your credit out. All they're doing, and think about it like this, you maxed your credit cards out. So let's say you had $30,000 in credit card limit and you maxed it out. And you're paying this high interest rate that you could barely afford. And you went to the credit card company or bank or whatever and said, I just give me $30,000 more. I need to, a limit. The bank's not going to do that for you because you are now a huge risk and a huge problem, right? Mm-hmm. So
it doesn't matter how much you make.
Exactly. The government keeps voting themselves in new limit. They just keep upping the credit card limit in that example. And they're going to continue to do that until something happens, which is going to be either a drastic depression, recession, whatever, sometime in the future that will, clean this out. It'll force us to make tough decisions, or somebody's going to have to come into Washington, D.C. and make tough decisions. Mm-hmm. The problem with tough decisions.
It takes bipartisan support.
It takes bipartisan support. And because we don't have term limits in Congress, that'll never happen because they only care about getting reelected. And the point, Jamie Dimon, and to your point, yeah, our future is very bleak. And I am very nervous about long term. But I think we've been kicking the can down the road. So as long as they can keep kicking the can down the road and we don't ever like our grandkids, your children might have to pay the price.
Yeah.
Someday we're going to have to pay the price. But it'd be yes. To that point, yeah, that's been a snowball that's been building for years.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I mean, wanted to highlight one more thing before we hop off of this and see if you can come up with what he's talking about here. Possibly as transformational as the printing press, the steam engine, electricity, computing, and the internet. What do you think he's talking about?
Artificial intelligence.
That's it.
Yeah. And AI is, so how are we going to, if we're in the beginning stages of AI, which we are, right? Mm-hmm. In historical standard, we're in the beginning phase of AI. This is a great opportunity to go try to find the when they're doing the gold rush in California, they call the shovel, the people that sold the shovels made all the money, right? Early on. And then the gold was found. So right now we're in that pick and shovel stage of the AI. So I'm intrigued by, do you have any names or any ideas? We can't give like stock picks here, but like that's the area that I think is pretty intriguing. Mm-hmm. Where can we find the sector, the stock,
the
whatever.
Picks and the shovels.
Yes, the picks and the shovel stocks. Yeah. And then what is beyond that? And of course we have the names, the big names that are just doing quite well, NVIDIA and on and on. But yeah, AI is the new frontier.
Hey, I heard on my the news podcast I listen to every week, and plug for this. So I hate the news.
Yeah.
I cannot stand the news. And there's a 10-minute podcast I listen to every morning. It's called The Newsworthy. And it's 10 minutes worth of news. If you fast forward through the sponsors,
yeah,
then it's 9 minutes worth of news.
Yeah, it's good.
And I listen to it every morning. Well, on the podcast, $6 billion is going to Taiwan Semiconductors in grants or I don't know exactly. I didn't look into it, from America.
Oh, yeah. We passed that CHIPS Reduction Act. Yep. Was it the CHIPS Reduction Act that is giving this money away for this purpose, which should spur on those stocks, right? And we've seen that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Advanced Micro Devices, Intel, of course, NVIDIA. I'm excited about that piece of the market, and that's always going to go. Last thing I'll say on that, 2000, when I started this business, the stock market, I think I told the story of when I was driving across the river in St. Louis, the Edward Jones person that came on the radio every day, this is before XM Radio, it was local channel, and she said, if you don't own tech stocks, you're stupid, basically. She said that. So it was in March of 2000 when I heard that statement. Of course,
March of 2000?
Yes, and the tech crash was April of 2000 through 2002, basically. This is the interesting thing about it. I look at AI as this new craze that we're just all excited about, and you know it's not going to go on up forever and ever and ever. There's going to be a pullback. But if you go back and look at the NASDAQ in March of 2000.
I'll pull it up.
And then look at it in, say, March of 2002 and see where it fell to. Okay. And then look where it's at today. And I guess my point, you'll see those numbers in a second, but my point is, even if this AI, it's a huge new frontier and it might top out at some point, I'm still interested and excited about continuing to pursue that, even if we have a little pullback. All these stocks are so quote unquote overpriced because they've gone up so fast. They're ahead of their skis a little bit, but it's like the tech crash of 2000. Nobody wanted to get back in the tech market for a while. And now the NASDAQ has just soared in unbelievable heights since that time. So in other words, had you just stayed the course in tech from 2000 to now, you'd be doing really well, even though we had a crash.
All right, here we are.
That makes sense.
March 1st of 2000 to March 1st of 2002.
Yeah.
Is that
a
fair, the timeline?
Yeah.
Here we go. NASDAQ composite, price level percent change, down 62.32%.
So where is it from then to now?
Okay. So from March 1st, 2002?
March 1st, 2000 to current.
To now.
Okay. Yeah.
Up. Total return up 512.7.
All right. That's the point. So for 2 years, it was down 62%. And had you left it alone, it's up 527% over that 24-year period. And that's the thing with AI. So even if AI has a little hiccup here and there because it's, it's again roaring fast and it could peter out a little bit here. If it picks back up,
mm-hmm.
and which it will, in 10 years, 15 years from now, AI is the place to be.
Yeah.
I guess is my point.
So, hey, if you like this episode, if you like what we're doing, let us know. Click the like button here on YouTube. It really helps us if you click the like button. We appreciate you hanging out with us every Tuesday and for the latest market headlines. So now let's talk about something else. There's three topics that I really like what Zoe has prepared for us. It's inflation, small businesses, and college. So Americans are bracing for higher inflation. Basically, all that means is there's a chance that more people lose their jobs if Americans continue to expect higher inflation. And the reason for that is if people expect higher inflation, oftentimes that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because if you think that prices will be higher in the future, you should spend today. If you think prices are going to be fairly level, there's no incentive to spend today. But if you think they're going to be higher and you spend today, that forces inflation up. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And also, companies, businesses are wise to this as well. They will raise rates because of the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yep.
They know it's coming. I would love to do a study, I'm probably going to do this sometime this week. Increasing prices and inflation, when companies raise their prices because of inflation, quote unquote, even if it's not affecting them as dramatic as they mm-hmm. make it appear, their price points that go up and they sell it across the board, and then our price, you know, we go in and pay 3% more for something and they've charged us 3% more for that.
Mm-hmm.
Their net profit on that raise. And I'd love to see a stat of before inflation, before we had this hyperinflation, or not hyperinflation, before we've had this inflation thing that's happened over the last 3 years, how much profit companies have made off the same products, which will give you an idea of how companies take advantage of our fear of inflation.
Mm.
And they do. And they rarely bring it back down the same rate that it goes back up. And you can look at oil, you can look at your gas tank and figure that out, how you fill up your gas. But that's on every product from potato chips to gas. Most people in America think we're going to continue to have inflation. Companies know that. Inflation, like you said, self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. And to your point, we spend more, we buy more now in fear of that.
I think a perfect case study was go to Walmart while prices were just soaring higher. And sure, supply chain was an issue.
Sure.
But it's hard for me to believe that on everything it was as drastic as it was across the board.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe it was.
I don't think it was, and that's why my point. I'm gonna do a little side study on that.
Okay. An interesting thing. Enrollment in vocational community colleges are up 16% since 2018. Kind of funny timeline. I don't know why they picked 2018.
Right.
But enrollment in vocational community colleges are up 16% since 2018. And there's a quote here. It's from Micro, who does the dirty jobs.
Yeah, I
love
Micro. Yeah, he's great.
It's a bit like turning a tanker around, he continued. You're talking about perceptions, attitudes, stigmas, stereotypes, and all sorts of things. People in a lot of ways need to be deprogrammed about this idea that the best path for most people is a 4-year college degree. Coincidentally, the most expensive path.
Yeah, so I have a lot to say about this. I've got two sons in college, and I often wonder why we're paying so much money. It's so much more expensive than when I went to school. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I look at all of these kids. For example, University of Arkansas had the largest amount of freshmen ever, and they keep making that new set every year, right? It's just every year they have more freshmen than they had the year before, and it's a new record, right? And I'm thinking, where are all these kids going to get jobs? You know, if they all went finished, which they're not all going to finish in 4 years, we know that. But let's say the majority of 80% of them finish in 4 years and they're all in the job market. I know we are a great nation and we create a lot of jobs. But if you all have the same degree, you're all fighting to find jobs. And I know kids that are out of college. And Eli, I know you know people in this position that aren't in the job they want. They're in the job they have to have because they can't find something else. So they don't use their degree
sure. In
their job. And so the vocational side, this is, you know, he calls it dirty jobs, which would be plumbing, electrician, welders. There's such a need for that.
Mm-hmm.
And those folks that become apprentices in plumbing, for example, and then work their way up, there is an amazing amount of opportunity.
Well, this is well-timed. Last night, I called maybe 12 plumbers.
Oh, wow.
So
to find somebody to help you?
My neighbor, she's elderly, can't really do much for herself, so she called me over. Well, I'm okay at my job.
But you're not good at plumbing.
Yeah. I didn't do the trade school.
I wouldn't so know that either.
I'm in there with my shop back, just seeing, well, maybe I can get the shop back. So I called. I snaked it. I did everything that I could to the toilet.
Yeah.
But I said, ma'am.
You need a professional.
Well, you need a professional. Yeah. So I sat on the phone. I called 12 plumbers. Not a single one could come.
Yeah, because they're booked. And I get
it. It was 8 o'clock at night.
Well, yeah. And yeah.
I wouldn't want to work at 8 o'clock at night.
So think about being a plumber and you can choose and pick.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're making good money, all that stuff. So there's nobody willing to go at 8 o'clock at night to go help somebody, which is a shame. Sad.
My favorite part of the whole story was they have operators at all these companies. So they answered. Everyone answered.
Wow.
But then they schedule you for Thursday.
Right.
It was Monday night. They'd be like, yeah, we can get you in on Thursday. It's like,
I think that's the same case with electricians and, I mean, on down the line where the trade school stuff, and I think that's a lost art. And, it used to be before the 1980s, let's say, that wasn't such a stigma that you had to go to college. And it's just become that thing now. It's just a must. You must have it to get anywhere in life. You must have it. And I love the idea that we're reverting back and we're getting some kids that aren't meant for school. It doesn't mean you can't be successful. It doesn't. And that's the stigma. You can't be successful if you don't have a degree. And that's totally false. Mm-hmm. It's about work ethic. It's about what you choose to do with your time and what you choose how you treat people. It's a lot of things that aren't related to can you pass calculus or not. I mean, it is absolutely absurd. And I can say this from my kids being in college. I could not stand my college algebra class. Okay, I'm in finance. I'm in math. I have a finance degree. I couldn't stand. I was almost a rebellion. Like I was just like, why do I have to know what x squared plus y squared equals z squared? I don't care, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I'll have a calculator that does it for me when I get a job, right? Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like disgruntled college algebra. And then my kids are now having to take calculus. I'm like, unless you're an engineer, I don't know. I honestly don't know. And maybe our callers can completely educate me. But I don't think I've ever had to use calculus in my 25 years of being a financial planner advisor, ever. And so I know some things you do, like if you're a calculus teacher or an engineer.
Yeah.
I don't know why else. But our school system is expensive, and you have to take things that don't matter towards your degree. And I can see how people would want to not do that.
There are a few things that frustrate me more than teaching me something that can be automated.
Right.
And making me have to do it in the old-fashioned way.
Exactly.
Like, why do I have to do this on an analog calculator? I get it. I need to know the inputs so I can see how it changes the outputs. But teach me that. Don't make me do it on a calculator.
Right.
Okay.
No, I'm with you on that, 100%.
Hey, last thing that we're going to talk about, small businesses are growing. And most of the time, or not most of the time, but a growing number of people are still full-time employed or part-time employed and starting their small business. So my personal opinion, I think a lot of this is coming from the amount of technology making people not have to work such long hours. Jamie Dimon even talked about, he thinks that we could be moving towards a four-day work.
Yeah, I saw that four-day work. And if we can't.
But the market's open 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And I heard someone talk about it opening on Saturday.
Right. Oh,
please no.
Yeah, but no doubt. Oh my gosh, no doubt.
But please, if people are more productive at work, they're able to have more time personally.
Right.
And that gives them time to dream up what they actually would like to do and start their own business. I think that's a great thing.
I think it's a great thing. And technology has allowed us, to your point, to have more opportunities in small business.
Yeah.
Because small business now is a lot different than when the old days when it was just a restaurant or a coffee shop or something.
You can
now
automate just about everything.
Exactly. It's pretty crazy. I would say this is also a wonderful part about being in America. Mm-hmm. So I hear a lot of things about the fear of China, the fear of the world catching up to us, passing us, we're going to be left in the dust. And we can be, based on our politicians putting us in incredibly bad positions with debt. But as far as ingenuity and capitalism and all that, and free markets, small business, the ability in America to do this, there are millionaire 22-year-olds because they went out and took a chance on something and it worked. And that you can't do that in most places in the world.
No.
And America is still the beacon of all that. Mm-hmm. And I hope we don't ever lose that.
Hey, so to that extent, and building off of that, what I'd like to hear in the comments this week is, which generation do you think was best off when they graduated school?
That's a great question.
So baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, now Gen Z. Which generation do you think is best off? And we've seen how boomers has kind of played out. We haven't seen how some of the other ones have played out. Which do you think is best off when they graduated school? School being high school or college.
Right. It's a great question. And you're asking, are you asking me or you want me to? You're asking our
listeners.
Listeners,
we,
yeah.
We can circle back.
We can talk about that later.
Yeah. So we had a comment, and this is, we don't really have to discuss the comment, but we had a comment, so we don't have to do a dad joke this week. It comes from Mark. Mark, thank you for making the comment. He said, great guest.
So we don't have to do a dad joke because we had a comment.
No
great
dad
guest.
Joke necessary. So, hey, we look forward to your comments so that we do not have to do a dad joke. We appreciate you joining us this week on The Market Moment, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
The hosts of this show are employees of Mach 1 Financial Group. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and nothing said in the show should be taken as investment advice. Mach 1 Financial Group, LLC, is an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Rogers, Arkansas. Mach 1 may only transact business in those states in which it maintains a notice filing or qualifies for an exemption or exclusion from registration requirements. SEC registration does not constitute an endorsement of the firm by the commission, nor does it indicate that the advisor has attained a particular level of skill or ability. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investment strategies have the potential for profit or loss. The information presented is the sole opinion of the speaker and is not meant to be investment advice. Mach 1 does not provide tax or legal advice. You should speak to your tax or legal advisor regarding your specific situation. For full disclosures, click on the link in the episode description below.